Hello, friends. Welcome back to yet another episode of What Page Are You On? It me, Bethany Rutter, and I'm here with my good friend and business partner.
It me, Alice Slater.
The reason I sound so smug and excited is because I feel like, you know, maybe you thought that you would never hear this voice again, that we were just gone, that we were just dead. But we're not. We're back. We're alive and kicking. Are we not, Alice?
We are. We are alive and well. We've just been very busy. Been so busy.
Yes, and I feel like, you know, maybe it's worth talking about that. Because obviously, you know, when we don't do an episode for a while, I don't think we've ever had as long an unplanned break as this. But I, you know, when we don't do an episode for a while, people are like, where's the pod? We miss the pod, which is obviously so nice. But, you know, realistically, you have a job. I kind of have a job. You have a book coming out this year. Like, we don't make money from the pod. So when life gets busy, the pod is kind of the first thing to go. You know, just in brutal economic terms, right?
Yeah, unfortunately, it's true. And when life gets very busy, the other thing, in reality, it's not just the pod, because the pod only takes like 40 minutes to an hour to record. It takes no time to edit. We don't do a huge amount of social media work, so it's not actually a big deal. The thing that goes out the window is reading.
Yeah, and like focused reading with a purpose rather than just like, you know, whatever.
Picking up whenever. Exactly. And I really hate reading to a deadline. I've never liked it. I really like to let the quality of the book dictate how quickly I read it. And yeah, I just found that my reading was so erratic over the last year. As a combination of being really busy, like life stuff getting in the way, working on my next book, working on my last book. Yeah, my reading has been all over the place. I think in 2022, I've read the least number of books that I have read since records began.
Mm. It's just life, man.
Still a respectable figure, but it's like 20 less, 30 less than I normally read. So
yeah, that is why we have been absent, because, you know, life has happened. And unfortunately, as accountable as we wish we were to you, our dear listeners, the lack of, you know, sponsors to keep happy and the like just means that when life gets busy, it is the pod that tends to go. But we have good intentions for this year. We're setting manageable, hopefully, goals to keep it going. And
yes.
You know, starting it would just be
as we mean to go on.
Starting as we mean to go on. It would be sad to lose it, especially in the year where Alice Slater, you do have a book out. So
exactly.
It ain't gonna happen. We're gonna keep it alive.
And so, of course, we are now. This year, does this year mark 6 years of podding?
So I recorded Hello Friend, which was the first time we podded together in 2017.
So yeah. See?
6 years of podding with Alice about books.
Aww. Okay. So,
that's,
you know,
wild.
We're not ready to throw in the towel. It's just that sometimes the towel needs to be draped over the radiator and just left to, like, chill out for a bit, you know? Just left
precisely
to, like, get a little bit fresher. All right. But with all that said, we do have
a fun episode. We're going to dive right in to something we should have dived into maybe, like, a month and a half ago. But we know that you, dear listeners, are always keen to hear our books of the year. And, you know, part of me was like, oh, if we don't get it out before the end of 2022, is there any point in doing it at all? But we think, yes, there is, because I know that, you know, people actually have said, like, that, you know, they sometimes base some of the next year's reading around what was in our books of the year from the previous year. So I think it would be still nice and useful for us to do that episode, don't you, Alice?
I agree. Also, it's because my books of the year are all books that I really loved, and any opportunity to champion them once more is an opportunity that I'm going to grab with both hands.
Agree. So forgive us if we are slightly rusty at podding, or if we've forgotten anything about the books, because, you know, some of these were read a very long time ago. But we're going to dive right in. Alice, would you like to kick us off?
Okay, so I'm just going to quickly explain how I have come up with my list, right? I only include books that were published in the year of our Lord 2022. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to include any backlist. I'm not going to be including anything
proofs
that's been published this year, but that I read the proof of last year. I'm only including books that were published in 2022.
Yep,
and I've
same.
Also ordered them alphabetically. So, you know, they're in no order, just in the order of alphabetically by title.
I haven't even done that.
So, I've done something else that I haven't done before, but last year, not to like be bragging, not to be name dropping, not to be showing off, but quite a few of my very precious friends had books out, all of which I loved, but I've just decided I'm not including anyone who's been in my kitchen, who I've shared a cocktail with. So yeah. I might throw in a few honourable mentions along the way. But yeah, these are just... Okay, so enough ramble. Enough preamble. The first one on my list is The Book of the Most Precious Substance by Sarah Gran.
Also on my list.
I knew it would be on your list. I knew it.
I even talked about her on Twitter today because I love her so much.
That's how I knew. I was like, that bitch is thinking about the pod that we're recording later.
I think about Sarah Gran every day.
Okay, shall I nutshell?
Please.
This book. Okay, so The Book of the Most Precious Substance. First of all, we did actually interview Sarah earlier in 2022. So you should go and listen to that if you've already read the book. If you haven't.
She is so cool.
You can listen to the interview, but you may as well read the book first so that you're even more pumped up. But basically, this is a book about a bookseller who specializes in like rare antique books. She gets this offer that she can't refuse. Someone that she knows has a buyer who's prepared to spend a huge amount of money, like an eye-watering, like seven figures style amount of money, if she can find this super rare occult text called The Book of the Most Precious Substance. And she's like, okay, cool, I'll give it a go. And then what she ends up doing is embarking on this incredibly horny, like, sexcapade to try and get hold of this, like, super devilish, witchy book. It is such a romp. I think that's the best way to describe it. Like, it's just so much fun, even though it has some really dark themes and it has a really upsetting, like, motivational core. It's just a really fun read.
It is so fun. It's so fun. And yeah, I'm just truly, I'm a Gran stan. That's what I'm calling myself. I read, last year, read Book of the Most Precious Substance, but I also read the first in her detective series, City of the Dead, which I loved. I just think she's amazing. And I love hearing from her brain.
I really need to read City of the Dead because it's set in New Orleans, isn't it?
It is. And I know that you're not a detective fiction person, but I just think for the New Orleans and for the Sarah Gran, I think it's worth trying it. And I have a physical copy, so I can lend it to you if you don't already have it.
Oh, I would love that. Because, yeah, I don't want to, like, limit myself by just deciding this shit's not for me. Like, I will always keep dipping my toes. If there's the right premise, the right author, the right setting, I don't know. I'll give anything a go once.
Legit. So, maybe I will begin my... Well, not begin because... Book of the Most Precious Substance was on my top 10, but I'll choose the next one as a book that I don't think you have read.
Okay.
So it is Sea of Tranquility by Emily St. John Mandel.
No, I haven't read this.
So it didn't immediately appeal to me, I've got to say. You have read Station 11.
I've read Station 11. I absolutely loved Station 11.
Same, but I had not read any of her other books. Had you read any of her other
books? No, me neither. No, nothing. I still haven't to this day.
Yeah, so I feel like maybe we were in the same position of, like, we love Station 11. Station 11 was incredible, but for some reason, just were never motivated to read anything else by her, which is kind of weird, but maybe speaks to the kind of books that she writes, and I don't know. Anyway... For some reason, I started reading Sea of Tranquility, and I just loved it. It is so banging, and it's banging in the same way that Station 11 is also banging. So much like with Station 11, it's kind of hard to nutshell. So I'm going to be a naughty little bitch, and I'm going to read
from the Waterstones website. Little worm.
Yeah, I don't know. I just feel like when there's kind of... those kind of elements, it's maybe easier to let someone else do the work.
Okay, go on. We'll forgive you this time. This is your one get out of jail free card, though. This is your one free pass.
We'll see. We'll see about that.
go on, then.
Okay. In 1912, 18-year-old Edwin St. Andrew crosses the Atlantic, exiled from English polite society. In British Columbia, he enters the forest, spellbound by the beauty of the Canadian wilderness, and for a split second, all is darkness. The notes of a violin echoing unnaturally through the air. The experience shocks him to his core. 2 centuries later, Olive Llewellyn, a famous writer, is traveling all over Earth, far away from her home in the second moon colony. Within the text of Olive's best-selling novel lies a strange passage. A man plays his violin for change in the echoing corridor of an airship terminal as the trees of a forest rise around him. When Gaspari Jacques Roberts, a detective in the black-skied Night City, is hired to investigate an anomaly in time, he uncovers a series of lives upended. The exiled son of an aristocrat driven to madness, a writer trapped far from home as a pandemic ravages Earth, and a childhood friend from the Night City who, like Gaspari himself, has glimpsed the chance to do something extraordinary that will disrupt the timeline of the universe. Now do you see why I couldn't nutshell that bitch myself? Right?
Okay, listen. Fine.
It's a lot.
And she's complicated.
She's complicated. And if I just read that blurb, I'd be like, not for me, not for me. So I'm really glad that for some reason I got sucked into reading it. Because I read it in like a day. It was so good.
Really?
It's amazing. And it's so, wow. You know, the way that Station 11 is just incredibly like moving and thought provoking and very riche.
Yeah,
It's very similar. So I think if you like Station 11, you would definitely like this, even though it's kind of, you know, similar but different. So I would say if you have recently read one, I would maybe not read the other in quick succession, because I do think you could end up with the impression that, you know, I don't know. I think it's maybe more valuable to read them further apart so that you're more impressed by them separately.
So are they in any way related?
Not in any way related, other than that they're about sort of parallel lives, pandemics, the future, the past, how those things overlap, and art, and yeah, they're not related really, but you can tell that
thematically that they're from related.
They're like from the same mind, the same person's interests are being unveiled here.
Sorry, the thing with Station 11, the thing that I love about it so much is that it's so intrinsically just deeply readable. Like, I also find that it's quite a difficult book to nutshell, and I don't know, without wanting to sound kind of negative about it, but it's difficult to nutshell and make it sound as compelling as it is.
Well, exactly. Because
obviously you can do like, you can kind of do the kind of like the sexy kind of blurb, which is that it's about a big pandemic and it wipes out the majority of the planet. It's about the survivors. But actually, the blurb on the back of the book is about like this like wandering theater. And every time I saw that, I was like, snooze fest. That doesn't sound fun to me. I'm not interested in that. It sounds like it's going to be. Yeah, but it's really not. It's so fucking good.
And that is how I feel about Sea of Tranquility. Like, on the face of it, I'm not super interested in like multiple timeline kind of things that are also like speculative, but this just works so well, and it does actually make me curious to read her other books. The bitch has got me. She's finally suckered me in.
All right, maybe I'll give it a go. I definitely have a proof of it.
Yeah, somewhere. I got a proof and I just didn't read it. And then it was like 99p on the Kindle. And I thought, oh, let's give it a go. And yeah, loved it.
Sometimes that's all it takes. It's just, you know, to actually read it in a more convenient.
That. Yeah, I really find that there'll be books that I get sent as a proof and they'll just sit on a pile. And then it will be the 99p book of the day on Kindle and I'll buy it. And that will be what tips me into reading it. What's your next book, my friend?
Okay. The next book on my list is another author that we've had on the pod. It's A Certain Hunger by Chelsea G. Summers.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I mean, I know we've already discussed this. I don't care. We're going to go in again. This one took my breath away. So I came across A Certain Hunger because when I was new to TikTok over the kind of Christmas break last year, so the 21-22 Christmas break, and A Certain Hunger was all over TikTok. And the US edition has this really beautiful painting as a cover. And I was interested, I was intrigued. So I ordered the US version from Blackwells because the UK version hadn't been announced yet. So I read it ages ago. And just, I was so delighted that it found a home with Faber in the UK. It came out summer 22. And I absolutely loved it. So it's about a cannibal food critic who is telling the story of her life from her prison cell. Fucking classic situation. I cannot believe that someone as, like, Chelsea is a rock star, right? And she has created this voice that is just so unique, so compelling. She has, Dorothy, that is, has such a kind of purple, pretentious way of speaking. Like, she loves using the most lurid language to describe food, sex, and violence. And I was absolutely hooked. Absolutely hooked.
Same, and that's also one of my top 10. And I just think it's very satisfying to come across a book that has, like, a splashy premise like that, that really does deliver in every way. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, because yeah, I feel 100%. Like we talk about this quite a lot, where, you know, you see books being marketed that are sort of dark and whatever, and then you read them and you're like, oh, okay, I see. I get where we are with this. And so it was really cool to read a book that really, like, did the thing and did it with such kind of craft as well. It's not just a good idea. It's a good idea well executed. And I feel like we are so often starved of that.
I also feel like she really, like, Chelsea really took her time in crafting it. I think she spent 8 years working on this novel. And, like, she spent that time absolutely entrenched in food writing to inform this voice. And, like, I think it's just, it feels so original, while also, you know, we have seen foodie cannibals before, obviously, like, in Hannibal Lecter, but to take it one step further, to have this, like, food writer, and, like, I don't know, there's something about it that just, it's the book that I didn't know I was desperate to read, and it really, like, really saw me through last winter.
It's really exciting. It's an exciting book. We loved it. I feel like so many people I know that have read it have loved it. And I'm just really happy that it is finding its audience so well.
Also, how wild that it wasn't just snapped up immediately by a publisher. Like, it was originally picked up by Audible. That was her first publication.
I do think, you know, obviously we would say this, but I do think that it's so worth listening to the interview that we did with Chelsea on the pod. Because, yeah, she really, like... And it was the same with Sarah Grant as well, that they're both very, like, upfront about the difficulties they've experienced in publishing. And I think both of those interviews are, yeah, very interesting on those grounds, just in terms of these books that to us are so obviously bangers that for whatever reason struggled to get published in the first place.
And I think that's why it's so exciting to see both of them really find their audience. Like, A Certain Hunger, it's such a massive TikTok book, but it's also grown beyond that as well. I can't wait to read whatever she does next. I can't even imagine where she's going next. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Because that is always, like, the interesting thing when someone's first book, you know, took a long time and seemed kind of very personal. It's like, what is going to be the next move?
Yeah. I'm buzzing. I'm ready. I'm ready for it. What do you have next on your list?
So next on my list is The Trees by Percival Everett.
Ah.
Which I don't think you have read.
I haven't. I have a copy.
So The Trees is about these two FBI agents, or not FBI, Mississippi Bureau of Investigation agents, who are looking into a series of murders where, so at each crime scene of the present day murders, there is a second dead body present, which is that of a young man who resembles Emmett Till. And the book is basically about the combination of the legacy of the murder of Emmett Till and the present day. And it is just very wild and very up my street. And each chapter is about, like, 2 or 3 pages long. It's really, really fast. I've never read any Percival Everett before. As far as I know, this is not necessarily, like, super representative of his other books. So it may be that this book appeals to me a lot more than his other books, because it does have that kind of crimey element. But I just love this. It was It's not a short book, but it is very pacey, and it kind of felt like it had elements of like Attica Locke, but also completely different in that it's got this kind of weirder element, which is closer to like Mumbo Jumbo by Ishmael Reed, but it's not as weird as that. It's much more straightforward.
The book only thing I will as well.
Book is shortlisted, yeah. My only thing I would say about it, and other people have also pointed this out, which, you know, I think in the grand scheme of the book is not the hugest problem, but I would just flag that it is, like, repeatedly fatphobic in a very banal way, like, completely unnecessary. Yeah, like, one of the Mississippi Bureau of Investigation agents is fat, and the way that that is treated is, like, quite unpleasant.
That's fucking tedious.
And it comes up quite a lot. And it is just one of those things where you're like, why? Like, what is this for? Because it doesn't feel like it's for anything. So that's my main criticism of this book. But aside from that, great. Juicy. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. The other day, my colleague came up to me. And it is funny how, like, obviously we're very much faces right in the fucking fire pit of the book world. I love keeping track of prizes and new releases and all that, whereas like a lot of my like book reading friends who are not in the industry either as writers or as, you know, publishing professionals, just a casual readers. And my colleague wandered over and was like, I'm reading the best book, I don't know if you've ever heard of it, and it was The Trees. And I was like, yeah, that's pretty famous. And he was like, oh, is it? I was like, yeah. Sort of, I guess, like, you know, shortlisted for the Booker. I don't know. But I hope that this puts Percival Everett on the map in the UK lit scene, because he's massive in America, right? Like, he's very well renowned in the US, and I don't feel like he's seen that success here.
I would really recommend this to anyone that likes kind of crimey things, but it's not like a trad thriller. It's something completely different and is extremely compelling, and I think many of our listeners would like it.
Do you want to know what's next on my list?
Hit me.
I don't know if you've read this one or not. If you haven't read it, I'm going to fucking scream, because I've told you to read it because it's so good. But it's Children of Paradise by Camilla Gudova.
Oh, no, yeah, because we did talk about doing an episode about it, didn't we? And then...
Yeah, because I really want to get her on. I want to interview her. That's my dream.
I feel like that's a realistic dream. Okay, tell us about this book.
That's me manifesting it. I doubt she listens to the podcast, but Camilla, come on the pod. Okay, so this is her debut novel. Previously, she had a short story collection out with Fitzcarraldo called The Doll's Alphabet. But this is a novel. It's about a young woman called Holly who gets a job at her local cinema. It's an indie cinema. It's been around forever, and it is a really kind of decrepit, rotting building. The job is really menial. She does lots of, like, cleaning up shit in the toilets and sweeping up popcorn in the cinema aisles, and like the owner is old and mad, and her boss is weird and kind of unpleasant. Her colleagues, like the other employees at the cinema, are really cliquey, and it takes her absolutely ages to get them to thaw and let her in to their like social fold. And when she does, everything goes like kind of wild and trippy. I love this so much. I read it in like a day, 2 days, something like that. I didn't want it to end. It's exactly the kind of like super gross literary fiction that I love. It's really compelling. You read so much of it wincing because it's so kind of bodily and visceral. But also it's this brilliant like snapshot. Again, it's like this another book that looks at the kind of meniality of work. Do you know what I mean? You're there all the time, and yet it is so empty. And yet it takes up the majority of your waking life. I just loved it. It kind of reminded me of Sweet Bitter, but like Sweet Bitter's weird, gross cousin that you're just like, I cannot believe you guys are related. I don't really see it, but I do. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. Okay, cool. Yeah. No, I mean, whenever you have mentioned it, I thought, yes, I would like to read that. If I had a proof, I don't know what I did with it, but it does sound like a good one for the pod. And I think that getting her on the pod is definitely within our capabilities, maybe, unless she's antisocial or doesn't like us.
I would even go as far as to say, bold statement, but I think this was my book of the year.
Wow. Okay, I love that. I love this for you.
I loved it so much.
Do you have a physical copy that you can?
I do. I'm holding it in my hand as we speak.
I'm sold.
Yeah. You're sold because I'll lend it, yeah.
Yeah. That's okay. I'm sold because I got easy access.
Yeah, you've got a pipeline now. It's a success. But yeah, I really loved it. And I feel like it really sits in a space that I find it's difficult to find books that really tick these boxes for me. Like, it's not horror. It's not a thriller. It's literary fiction. But it also kind of has, like, a gross, sticky little finger in each of these camps. You know, like, there are moments that are very horrifying. It would be such a trippy movie. I cannot sing its praises enough, honestly.
I'm excited. I'm excited to read it. So while we're on the subject of the world of work, my next choice is We Had to Remove This Post by Hannah Bevoets.
Ah, that's the first one you said that's also on my list.
Yes, I thought I'm gonna go for that because I feel like it could be on yours, but it might not be. So it's translated by Emma Rault. You know, because we gotta name the translator.
Certainly.
And in a nutshell, it's about a content moderator at a massive Facebook-like tech company whose job it is to review flagged content and the kind of madly traumatic spiral of her life after she starts working there.
Yes, it's about how... Yeah, it's like it's more about like how viewing this content all day, every day starts to impact the way that she moves through the world and how it impacts her relationships, how it impacts her and her colleagues' like perception of normality.
I guess because she can only really relate to her colleagues, her life becomes narrower and narrower because she can't really kind of have friendships and relationships outside of work because nobody else understands what their lives are like.
The trauma, like the...
Yeah.
Yeah, like the repetitive nature of being exposed to the most violent, gratuitous, hateful content that you can imagine. And, like, there are so many moments in this book that... I've read it twice now because we did a pod about it and I reread it for that. And the second time around, I just loved it even more. I feel like it's quite a quiet book in some ways, considering how loud the premise is. I think a lot of people come to it expecting something that's going to be really gratuitous, and it's not. It really kind of closes the door a little bit on the exact graphic nature of the content that she's viewing. But, you know, which to me was a strength. I don't need to be told exactly what it is. Like, I can imagine exactly, you know what I mean? Like, I don't need that for the book to work.
Agreed.
And I think also, because it's a novella, it feels very brief. Like, you know, the ending does come up very quickly. And I think it was only really my second reading that I really cognitively understood the power of the ending. I love it so much. I absolutely loved it.
Agree. I'm glad it's on both of our lists.
Unsurprising. But it's also one that I made a TikTok about it. Not to bring up TikTok again, but I will. And it probably won't be the last time. I made a TikTok about it that because it's a very internet-y book, the TikTok went viral. The TikTok itself wasn't special, but I think the book really captured that demographic's imagination. And it's been really interesting seeing who really loved it and really with whom it really resonated and who kind of were not satisfied because what they really wanted was some kind of like something really gnarly. And like,
yeah, and I always think that's funny the way that it really mirrors kind of what is that not how the book opens, is about her talking about,
yes,
how,
exactly,
what's the worst thing you ever saw? And it feels like the book is provoking the exact reaction in people that she is trying to deal with in the book of, you know, tell me, you know, I want to know, I want to know the worst thing you ever saw. I want to read the worst thing that I can imagine. Like, if you don't give me that, I won't be satisfied.
Yeah, exactly. It's just really smart. And like, I do find that because being on TikTok, you're exposed to more teenagers than you maybe would otherwise be, unless you work with teenagers or live with teenagers. And so it's been fascinating for me, like, seeing what their attitudes are like towards trauma, and how often you'll see, particularly, like, on the kind of true crime kind of channels, that you see these very, like, you know, comments full of bravado about how kind of untouched they feel by violence, and how they can watch all these things and they don't even blink, and it's just really interesting, like, because it's not true. Do you know what I mean? Like, they may think that, they may be saying that, but it is affecting you. It, you know, it worms its way in one way or another, and that's exactly what this book is talking about, that it is worming its way into your mind. It is affecting you in one way or another. I ended up finding that whole moment, from creating the TikTok to seeing the response, and then of course also seeing other people's responses to the book, is that it's really disturbing, because it does touch upon pretty much everything you might think you would need to do a content warning for. The book touches upon in one way or another.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, for some people, it was way too much, and they felt that it was really gratuitous, and that they didn't understand why it even needed to exist. And I just loved that kind of, that, like, binary that the book created. All right. Oh, it's my turn. Okay. So this, I would never normally say this. I feel like I come up with my 10, then I stick by my 10. This is one that I was kind of on the fence about, but I was like, no, you know what? Fuck it. It's going in. I've got Lapvona by Atessa Moshfegh,
which, as we discussed the other day, I have purchased on audio but have not read yet. I am looking forward to it, and I would like to hear you chat about it, please.
Okay, let me just... I'm going to go in. So the premise of it is it's about a medieval fiefdom. Specifically, it's about the son of a shepherd. I'm trying to think, like, what is premise and what would be spoilery. That's what I'm going to say. It's about the son of a shepherd. He has a friendship with the lord's son, and these two boys end up in a little scrape, and everything kicks off from there. It's got a bit of cannibalism in there. It's got an old witch lady who breastfeeds the entire village. It's almost leans into the surreal and the magical from time to time, but it's also so grotesquely real. It's a really fucking weird book. And honestly, I just love the fact that Atessa Moshfegh does not give a fuck what you're expecting, what her readers would like next. Like, every single book is so radically different from the last.
Yeah.
And I don't think anyone would have been like, having read Death in Her Hands, I don't think anyone would have been like, ah, now she's going to do some mad medieval shit. Do you know what I mean? Like, she marches to the beat of her own drum. I said, the reason why I'm on the fence about it is because, if I'm really honest with myself, I know I wouldn't have picked this book up if it wasn't Atessa. If it was a debut from an unknown, I'm not sure medieval fiefdom would have, like, got me excited. So I'm really glad that I read it. I read it immediately as soon as my proof came. And I loved it. I really loved it. I probably rank it in my great Atessa Moshfegh rankings. I think it would come in number 3. So My Year in Rest Relaxation, Eileen, then Lapvona.
Okay, I've read both of the other two, and I am going to listen to Lapvona, and I hope I enjoy it. I think there's...
Yeah, you let me know.
Yeah, I think there's big scope for me to enjoy it.
The problem is, I feel like I don't actually have that much to say about it. That's the thing. Like, it didn't whip me up into... Considering this is a top 10 podcast, and now I feel like I'm giving a really lukewarm review. Like, it didn't whip me up into a verbal frenzy. I didn't feel, like, inclined to, you know, rush and talk to everyone about it. At the same time, though, it's so delightfully gross and weird, and I love really gross books. I love weird smells. I love turning rocks over to see what bugs are underneath. You know, like, I'm a gremlin person, and I think it just really spoke to that, like, the goblin within, you know?
I hear you. So, while we're in the Middle Ages...
Oh, yeah.
I'm gonna keep us in the Middle Ages with a book that I know that you haven't read, because it is so random. Like, this inclusion, Anyway, it's Hurdy Gurdy by Christopher Wilson.
What? What is that? I've never heard of her.
Exactly. Yeah, quite. So, picture the scene. There I was doing a little proof drop of my book, Welcome to Your Life, in some bookshops last year. And there was this one book that I saw on a table at like the first bookshop. And I thought, what the hell is that? Because I don't know. I think maybe I was in a moment where I was feeling very like jaded by, I don't know, you like gal fiction for gals and like how everything kind of looked the same and everything kind of sounded the same. All the covers were just kind of blending into one. I was just fed up of all of it. And so there was this random book that had an illuminated medieval like letter on the cover. And it just looks so different to all the other books. Like, it looks like a medieval manuscript. And I may be slightly breaking the rules because I think it was only released in paperback last year. But I'm going to put it in anyway, just because it's such a rogue choice. And yeah,
I'll allow it.
Yeah. It's about a monk who basically has to dodge the plague in the year 1349. The plague is coming. And it just follows this one guy, this one like young monk, and it's so funny and so just like weird and silly. And it just felt so different from all the other stuff that I was reading. Like, it felt really clever, but it also just felt fun in a way that I think maybe a lot of the books I was reading were not. And it was just so delightful, and I was so glad that I bought it. And it just, yeah, it truly stayed in my brain as like a banger. Because I feel like, you know, it's often the case that good books are serious, and that's, you know, that's fine. But I feel like, you know, every so often there is like a question on Twitter of like, you know, what are some good books that are also funny? And I really feel like this is one of them. And it just truly delighted me. And I knew that it had to be in my top 10 of the year. So that is my random rogue entry.
It's so rogue. I've never heard of the book. I also feel like, should I have come across that organically? I probably wouldn't have reached for it. And yeah. I certainly wouldn't have thought of you.
Yeah, so exactly.
It's delightful around.
Yeah. And it's, you know, maybe what you were saying about Latvona, and that if it was not by Atessa Moshfegh, you wouldn't have read it. And this book, I don't know what... I do think it was just this need to read something that wasn't like everything else that kind of pushed me towards it. And it, yeah, it's published by Faber. Because he has quite a... excuse me, Christopher Wilson, but a generic name. I'm actually kind of struggling to figure out like what else he's written, because if you click on his name on Waterstones, it brings up everything from like a piano, like a music book, to like novels. And I'm like, I don't think they're all going to be by him, but I think some of them are probably by him.
So I have a hack for you. Here's my life hack in this situation. You need to look up a website called Fantastic Fiction. Pop his name in. And it's very good. It will list each author. It lists everything they've written. But it's very good at splitting out
the different Christopher Wilsons.
Yeah. So as long as you find Hurdy Gurdy. That's what it's called, Hurdy Gurdy?
Yeah.
Hey, there you go.
Interesting. Okay, so yeah, I mean, he's written other fiction, but he's not kind of particularly prolific. Yeah, I just loved it. I don't know who he is, don't know what he looks like, don't know nothing about him. But Christopher Wilson, I love you.
I just love, after all these years, she still surprises me.
I can still surprise you. And I feel like if we were doing this before Christmas, I'd be like, if there is someone in your life who you're like, I want to buy them a book, but I don't know what to buy them, I would just say, just buy them Hurdy Gurdy and see if they like it. Because I think most people would probably find it entertaining in some way. What's your next book?
Okay, next on my list, I have a short story collection for a bit of fun. It's called Life Ceremony by Sayaka Murata, translated by Ginny Tapley Takamori. Yeah, short story collection. So the thing with this collection, okay, Sayaka Murata, I absolutely love Convenience Store Woman. Probably one of my favourite books from the last decade. I thought it was so fresh, gripping, I absolutely loved it. One of the things I look for most in my reading material is memorable characters, compelling voice, line level prose and a good plot, and I felt like Convenience Store Women had all four. Earthlings, I felt, I mean, how do you even approach Earthlings? Like, if you haven't read it, it's worth taking it for a spin. It has the wackiest ending that I just didn't know what to do with. I kind of feel like I need to reread it now that I know where it's going and see how I feel a few years later. So Life Ceremony, I wasn't sure where, you know, which way the needle would swing. I feel like when it's good though, it is unbelievable. Like, there are two stories in particular that I was just completely wild about. One of which was the eponymous story, Life Ceremony, which is about the practice of consuming loved ones after they pass. I just thought it was incredible. And then also the first story in the collection, which is about turning loved ones' bodies, turning human remains into furniture and clothing. Like, she just has such a dark, weird brain. And these concepts, just, they're so well executed. They're the kind of stories that just makes you think, my God, you're just so talented. It makes me want to throw up. And I cannot, even if you're not a big short story fan, just buy it for those two stories, because you'll have a good time.
I'm very interested in this because, yeah, I wasn't particularly drawn to read this collection, but and I also don't feel like I heard anyone talk about it the way that you have just talked about it, or singled out stories, or I don't really feel like I even had a concept of what the if there were kind of any broad themes of the collection. So now that you have spoken in favor of it, I'm definitely more inclined to read it.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's not the perfect album, which, you know, I'd say a collection like Salt Slow by Julia Armfield is the perfect album for me. There are no dud stories in that collection. I think every single one slaps. This one is a bit more of a mixed bag, but as I said, like, when it's good, it's fucking mind-blowing. So that's all I really want. I'd rather have, like, one or two stories that knock me out than a whole collection that just hums up one note, you know?
Yeah.
And, yeah, especially as I said, like, even if you only read those two, just treat yourself. You'll have such a good time.
Maybe I will, you know. So,
right. Are we going to do one more from you and then take a break, do a part two? Or do you just want to do like a bumper episode?
I think we should just come back strong. Just
okay.
Just do a big hench episode.
Okay, cool.
So next on my list is one that maybe is on... So there were like two on my list that I thought maybe this is going to be on Alice's list, or maybe it has like fallen off. I suspect it hasn't fallen off. Notes on an Execution by Denise Kafka.
Yeah! You know that was on my list.
I wasn't 100%. I don't know. I just thought maybe something had slipped in instead. I don't know.
Yeah, you never know. You never know.
You never know. Anything could happen. Which is about three women whose lives were impacted by a serial killer who is now on death row. Anything to add on that nutshell?
No, that's the perfect, like, high-level summary.
Yes. And it's just really good, isn't it? Like, it's just...
Oh, my God.
Her writing Honestly. Is just... incredible. The kind of psychological depth, she really created something very moving.
I wept. I absolutely wept. I feel like it's not often that I read stuff that I know will make me cry. I don't like to cry when I'm reading. I don't necessarily kind of aim to read stuff that's that emotionally resonant. But anyway, it absolutely... The kind of concluding, say, 30 pages, 20 pages, absolutely knocked me out. Just so, so beautiful, so sad about all this wasted potential, all these lost lives. It just incredible. Absolutely incredible. And I agree. I was sad not to see it be more critically recognized. I'm sure it received good reviews, but I would have liked to have seen it on some prize lists.
Yeah, you're right. I hadn't thought of that. But yeah, you're right.
I felt like the prose was so beautiful. It is just so beautifully crafted. Like, there are so many sentences and, like, paragraphs or just, like, brief lines that are just so well written. And I feel like that kind of craft is just stunning, beautiful. Just, I will read anything and everything else she writes.
Because I feel like I missed her first book. I remember I was sent a proof of it in, like, 2017, like, years ago.
It was Picador, wasn't it?
Yeah, which is probably why we got sent a proof. But yeah, just it completely passed me by. I just sort of didn't read it and got rid of the proof. And yeah, when I read Notes on an Execution, I regretted that. And I will.
Yeah, me too.
I will find it.
It's funny though, isn't it? Like, what can compel you to pick up a proof, or like what can compel you to never quite get to it? Like, we are very lucky in that we get sent a lot of stuff, and I also have an absolute fiendish habit for buying things even when I don't need them. So there's always something else, there's always another book. It's very difficult, I think, to like get one of my reading slots. And yeah, so often I think I miss things that were right under my nose, but too many pretty colours, too many distractions. Something else just pipped it to the post every time until finally I decided I wasn't going to read it. And now yep. I'm going to go and buy it, because what the fuck was I doing?
I hear you, my friend.
Especially as, even if, I think sometimes with you know, we're a very debut-focused industry. But sometimes a debut might fall a little bit short. You know, like, it's an author's first fucking book. So, like, I think having now read something that I loved, even if I don't love it as much, I'm going in with a very, like, I'm looking to, like, going in with a very open, generous heart and mind. And I'm hoping that I'll love it.
Agree. What's your next book, my friend?
Okay, my next book is The Odyssey by Lara Williams.
No, which it's not. Ain't read. Well,
it is now, because I didn't realise I've missed one. But it's okay. It doesn't matter that they're not now going to be in alphabetical order.
That's okay.
Don't let me forget. Okay, I'm just going to move that one down on my list. So you've not read The Odyssey?
I have not.
Interesting. Well, I loved it. Let me tell you all about it. So The Odyssey, it kind of is quite similar to some of the other books that we've already discussed. I definitely have a theme of things that I like. But anyway, this is about a young woman who gets a job on a cruise ship. And she's essentially running away from her problems, although we don't realise that immediately. And this cruise ship has a weird vibe. And as it goes on, it becomes increasingly strange. And almost the workforce feels increasingly claustrophobic and almost cult-like. That's all I'm going to say. It's just such a strange, quick, like, intoxicating read. It really reminded me of...
You Two Could Have a Body Like Mine by Alexandra.
Yes! Green. Yes, you knew immediately. It really
That's
reminded
what I was thinking.
Of...
I was going to say, it sounds like You Two Could Have a Body Like Mine by Alexandra Kleeman. And then you said...
Yes. And although I feel like you have to, you know, I don't know. Your mileage may vary, as we say. But it really reminded me of that book. Like, it has that very kind of quite cool... weird undertone,
like 90s surrealist kind of.
Yes,
yeah.
And same with Children of Paradise, actually. That's the other book that I was thinking, like, these themes of. And also same with We Had to Remove This Post, like, these books about work and weirdness and the way that strange things can become very normal very quickly, especially with the kind of groupthink situation where there's a whole bunch of you who are all experiencing this, like, weirdness together. So you all talk each other into believing that it's normal and that everything's okay. Mm. And then that clashing with external influences, and how that can suddenly, like, expose what a weird situation you are suddenly in very deep into. That was quite inarticulate, but you see what I'm saying. Like,
Yeah.
Cult vibes. Extreme no, cult vibes. Good. But... in a very, very, like, fresh and original direction. I just loved it. And it's so different to her other work. It's so different to Supper Club. And it's so different to Treats. What I remember of Treats, anyway, because I read that a very long time ago. But yeah, really fresh and different. And again, another book that I feel like you whip through it. Because it's just so compelling.
I really want to read this. And I like how many books that you have read that I have not read that I am now hyped to read.
But you know, you can tell that we haven't been recording the pod as often this year. Because previously, you could guarantee with our top tens that there would be at least 5 overlaps. And also, it's very likely that we have probably read the other books on each other's lists, with maybe a couple of outliers. Whereas this time around, I feel like we're strangers.
We are strangers, and I kind of love it. For this purpose. This purpose yeah. only. So, should I choose? So, I've got 3 left. How many have you got left?
I have got one. I've got 3 left.
So, shall I choose one that I think could be on your list?
I've got 2 left.
Okay. Then I'll choose one that is not going to be on your list.
Okay.
Strategically.
Okay.
In case one of them is, and then I steal one from you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, my next entree. Much like you had a short story collection, I feel like it's quite me to have a non-fiction entry. My entry of choice is Small Fires by Rebecca May Johnson.
I can see it on my little book trolley right now, and I was like, I bet Bethany Rutter has this book on her list.
She do.
She do. Tell me everything.
So, Small Fires is kind of hard to explain, but it's just a non-fiction book about cooking. And I didn't know what to expect. I've known Rebecca for some years, and she is delightful, and she is incredibly intelligent and thoughtful. And when I went into the book, I think I was expecting something maybe more, like, accessible. And it's actually quite challenging. And not in a bad way, in a very good way. It's just really, I'm just really excited that this got published. I don't know. It just feels very wide-reaching and thought-provoking. It's just quite exciting. And yeah, it's just even better than I thought it was going to be.
I was going to say, it's quite experimental.
Yeah, it's more experimental than I was expecting. It's more theoretical than I was expecting. It's just really cool. It's really got a lot going on. It's got kind of like memoir, but also kind of literary theory. It's just really fun and engaging and challenging. And I really feel like I got a lot out of it. And I feel like it's really testament to the work that Rebecca does, the things that she's interested in. It's like very political. It's just really stimulating. It was a real joy to read. And I'm really happy that it has experienced so much success in its life. And
it has had a lot of love, hasn't it?
It's had a lot of love. And, you know, something I found really interesting was that it came out during the Great Waterstones fuck up.
Still ongoing.
Which is still ongoing. But it came out in the peak of that. And it was just, it was really nice to see it get lots of good press at a time when, you know, as Rebecca said to me, like, even members of her family that had pre-ordered it hadn't got a copy because they pre-ordered it from Waterstones. And which must be like a fucking terrible experience as an author.
Honestly.
Anytime I see this book experiencing success, I am really happy because I feel like she's such an exciting force in food writing, which I feel is becoming an increasingly interesting space. And yeah, I really love her. I think she's a really thoughtful and interesting writer, and I want to read more things she writes.
Nice to have a little bit of nonfiction on the list.
Indeed.
Yeah, what's your next spices one, things please? Up a little bit. Okay, so my next one is a book that I'm pretty sure you've read. It's called New Animal by Ella Baxter. You've read this, right?
I have, yes.
So New Animal, it actually came out at the very beginning of the year. Very, very beginning of 22. I read it in 21, so I feel like I read it a long time ago now. But it still sits very heavily on my heart because it's such a beautiful, emotive story while also being so fucking outrageous. Wait, did we do a podcast about it?
I can't remember if we did or not. Like we did.
Our poor elderly minds. I've got absolutely no idea. I can't remember. There may or may not be a podcast about it. So just have a little look. But in a nutshell, it's about a woman who works in her family funeral home. She's a makeup artist. And at the very beginning of the book, her mother very unexpectedly dies. And in the throes of her grief, this woman just packs up her shit and moves across the country to go and stay with her dad. And she gets really into the local dominatrix scene, as one does. She gets really into the kink scene. And yeah, it's just really outrageous. It's a story about running away from your grief and trying to bury your feelings. There are so many lines in it that hit me so hard in deep in my feelings, but it's also quite funny and wild. And I love any kind of book in which a character is behaving like an absolute loon. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, like, yes. And I agree. I like books that make me, or like allow me to think about things that I would that I would never do, but I could do. Do you know what I mean? So not like a fantasy novel or like where someone goes to space. It's like, you know, what if I did that thing that like is completely taboo and I would know I would regret for the rest of my life.
But also there's something as well about like the very real, like you can really feel this character thinking in real time and making the wrong decision.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, just every time this bitch has to make a decision, she kind of goes off piste and comes up with something wild. I really loved it. I thought it was really witty. It was really sad. It was very beautiful. I really loved it. It's the kind, again, it's another book that I think I found it so compelling. I was in there and out, didn't take a breath, maybe a day, maybe 2 days. Obsessed.
Yeah, no, I remember it fondly. I didn't think of putting it in my top 10 of the year, but I really enjoy it, and I think it has a lot of appeal to the pod demographic.
What's your final title, or do you have two?
I actually have two. So the one that I think could be on your list is Vladimir by Julia May Jonas.
I knew it was going to be Vladimir. I was like, she knows that's going to be on my list. There's no way it would not be on my list.
So shall I do my other one and then we'll return to Vladimir as a final?
Let's just do Vladimir while we're here.
Okay, you tell me about Vladimir.
Okay, so Vladimir is about a woman whose husband is accused of sexual misconduct in the university at which they're both employed. While this is all going down, there's a new kid in school, a new dude starts working in their department called Vladimir, and she becomes absolutely wildly obsessed with him. And the book opens with, I'm not even going to spoil it, but there is the most outrageous line within the first like two paragraphs that let me know that this book was going to be a wild fucking ride. And would you agree? It's a wild ride.
It's such a wild ride. It's so fun. Again, it's that kind of genre of like, you know, when we were talking about New Animal and I said, you know, what if you did all the things that you know you shouldn't do? And the book, the original book for me that did that was I Love Dick by Chris Kraus. And this has some of that in that it's, you know, about someone with an unmanageable crush, essentially, and who does kind of insane things in service of that crush. And it's just so fun to read.
It's so fun. It's so messy. Again, though, I feel like the main character's voice, the character's name has completely escaped me, but her voice is just so good. Like, she's so delusional while still being very functional. Do you know what I mean? Like, that she isn't an unreliable narrator. I believe everything she's saying. I just know that she's talking shit a lot of the time. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, she's... Yeah. I completely agree. The reason that I went mute for a moment was because when you said you couldn't remember the narrator's name, I don't think the narrator has a name.
Oh, you're right. She doesn't have a name.
So I was just Googling, and I've had it confirmed that the narrator does not have a name.
Yeah, classic nameless narrator move.
So chic.
Yeah. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. And I felt like there were some really brilliant, interesting, like intergenerational moments between this woman and her students that like, she's just so bitchy. Like, she's not a very nice woman, and she's very impatient. She's very cynical, but she's very manipulative. So she's very good at saying the right things in the moment in order yes. to get what she wants.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know? And that yeah. is so satisfying to witness. Like, I absolutely loved her interiority. I loved being there for the ride, even though I would absolutely hate to spend any time with this woman.
Agree. I read it on our lad's holiday, and it was just such a delight. I loved it, and I would have no qualms recommending it to someone that enjoys the kind of books that we enjoy.
Agreed. All right, what's the last one on your list?
So the last one on my list, Minx. The Wily Little Minx, I think it's going to be one that you have not read, which is Book of the Moment of the last couple of months, Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow by Gabrielle Zevin. Yeah.
So I bought it for my husband for Christmas, which was my cunning way of buying myself a copy. But he is reading it, and he's taking his time, as is his prerogative. But no, that means I have not yet read it.
I loved it.
Oh my god, I'm so excited.
I am really glad I read it when I did, because I do think, you know, in our contrary little ways, that a book like that, that so many people were talking about in such gushing terms, I might just be like, well, I'm not going to fucking read it.
So she it's has about, to be different.
She does have to be different. It's, I don't know. I just feel like there are so many books out there that it's not like I'm ever going to be short of a book to read. So it's like I can just passively not get to it, you know?
Yeah.
So it's about two people called Sam and Sadie who meet as children in a hospital, and their reconnection as young adults, and then the entry into the mix of a third person called Marks, and about them together forming a video game company. And it is so good. Like, you know those books where you 100% believe that you are essentially reading, like, a history of real things and real people?
Ooh,
like,
yeah.
It's just more, it feels like more than fiction in a way. And you know what I fucking love? This is her 10th novel. Like, she is just, yep, this is Gabrielle Zevin's 10th novel.
Wow.
So she is, like, growing, she is honing her craft, and she is reaping the rewards. It is so good. And I also, like you, Alice Slater, do not enjoy being moved by fiction, but it is so, so moved. Like, this and Sea of Tranquility, I was moved to tears in a way that I found unpleasant, but...
It makes us sound like such little fucking lizards.
We are, like, we're little grinchy whatever. Lizards. I loved it. It's so beautiful. It is so engaging. It's so stimulating and exciting, and it's just a really wonderful book, and I'm really happy that it is doing as well as it is, and it will definitely be a prestige TV series in, like, 5 minutes' time. It's so visual, and I loved it. I loved it so much. You know what?
I was in Waterstones today, as is my way, and I was looking around at all the books, and I was like, what I really feel like reading is something which is incredibly beautiful on a line level, poignant, and banging. Like, I only want to read bangers. I only want to read books that slap. It could be a quiet slap. It could be a massive, loud crack. But I just looking for that sweet spot. And I feel like maybe Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow is actually the book that I'm looking for.
I would be shocked if you did not think this was a banger. It may not be okay. The most obvious choice. I'm not, you know, I'm not a gamer. I'm not interested in video games. But it just sucked me in. And, yeah, spat it's a real... out. Yeah, I feel like it is... It has the potential to be like a Station 11-style modern classic, in my humble opinion.
Yeah. No, I'm really excited. I feel like it's always exciting when everyone is talking about something. Even if that something ends up being Three Women by Lisa Tadeo, it's still exciting when there's, like, buzz.
Yeah. And at least this is been... not Three Women. This is...
This one's buzzy. So, you know, I'm going to give it a go.
I think you should.
I can't wait.
I'm excited for you. Alice, we did it!
We did it! We finally recorded a fucking episode! We did it!
Not just any episode. An hour-long episode for our friends.
So to wrap things up, I have a question for you.
Hit me.
I would like to know what your reading intentions are for 2023, if you even indulge in such a thing.
So my intentions, I'm going to go for quality rather than quantity in this answer. I would like to read more rom-coms because I write them.
Love that. And
I just feel like it's, I know so many people that are writing fun shit at the moment and I want to be more on top of it. I want to, you know, I want to be ahead of the game, ahead of the rom-com game.
So you want to be where the rom-com people are.
Yeah. And maybe my approach will be, I just read my own random shit, but I get the like pod books from you. Like you just tell me what to read pod wise because I mean,
that's my dream.
Yeah, you can be my concierge. You got any intentions?
That's me. Yeah, I mean, I always set the arbitrary goal of trying to read 100 books. I've never achieved that, and I don't really do anything to try and facilitate it. But you know, it's a fun, nice to have. What I really want to try and do is get better at getting through my proofs. In approximate order, rather than leaving things to rot on my shelves because I get excited by the new things. I want to try and read more of my proofs when they come in. And also, as I mentioned previously, I do love to buy books. I love to support bookshops. I have no issue with the amount of money I spend on books. But I spent the whole of last year recording every book I purchased. I didn't include digital purchases because I don't mind. They don't take up any space. It doesn't matter. But I kept track of every physical book I purchased and also whether or not I actually read them. And unsurprisingly, I buy more than I read. So I would like to try and like fix that balance a little bit and just get a little bit sharper at reading things as they come in, whether they are sent to me or whether I buy them.
I think that's a very good approach. I approve of this.
That being said, right now, the book that's calling to me is Into the Vampire by Anne Rice, which I've already read twice.
Your heart wants what your heart wants.
Them's the fucking shakes, do you know what I mean? Like, I can set my intentions, but ultimately, I'm going to go my own way.
But instead of going your own way, I think you should go your husband's way and yoink his copy of Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow and read that.
Maybe I will.
Well, my all friend. Right. We're back
it's
on the
5
horse.
PM. I'm going to go make a cocktail.
I love this for you. I'm going to edit this pod and then we will record some more pods in the future.
Yeah, we will. Oh my Deal. God. That's my reading intention.
Just do some pods. Just some pods.
Yeah. Just do some casual pods.
Well, my friend, I will see you next time. Bye.
See you next time. Bye.